Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I have two friends here in the studio with me today. On the right, Nick Dunn, a former chair of the Young Republicans and a former student of mine. Welcome, Nick.
Good to be here, Natalie.
You make me feel old.
Hopefully not.
And then on the political left, we have Sasha Lux Morgan, who is here, who is the president of Young Democrats. Welcome, Sasha.
Thank you so much for having me on this week.
Would love to hear a little bit more about you, Sasha. Tell us what you do professionally and a little bit about your background. Just for our listeners.
Okay. In my professional life, I'm getting a PhD in neuroscience at the University of Utah.
Okay.
And I am hoping, my committee willing, to be wrapping that up in the next few months.
Neuroscience sounds really heady. What does that really mean?
I'm interested in how different parts of the brain talk to each other. And so I spend basically a lot of time making maps of different parts of the brain and their connections.
This could be interesting in politics.
I think it's a good
great
fit.
Background.
I like it.
Yeah. Nick, how about you? Tell us what you do professionally and a little bit about your background.
Well, not anything near as cool as that. I work for the Salt Lake County Council and have worked for the state prior to that. And as you mentioned, I was a student of yours in grad school up at the U, and have been involved with politics, Republican politics, and used to had the Young Republicans, and I actually ran for the legislature last year and lost, so that was fun.
But. Yeah. You know, when I served an internship, a Hinckley intern from the University of Utah in Washington, D.C., I hung out with the Young Republicans a lot. It was such a privilege to do it. It was when Ronald Reagan was president, but I went to a birthday party at the White House for President Reagan and landed myself in People magazine just because they took a picture of it.
That's fantastic.
That's my Young Republican claim to fame. Do you guys have a claim to fame?
No, not yet. I'm going to search
Sasha?
For one now.
Not up there with that. No, I've never been invited to, Ronald Reagan's birthday party.
All right.
So.
Well, word has it you're going to get some more Democratic candidates coming through here, presidential candidates, so maybe you'll get some fun touches over the next year and a half. We'll see.
I hope so. We've had some exciting folks come through already.
Yeah. Tell us the ones you've met. Or interacted with?
So I was actually at the Young Democrats of America meeting in Indianapolis, Indiana until all last week. I just got back Sunday.
Wow.
And we heard from Pete Buttigieg because he's hometown favorite.
Yeah.
Wayne
was he impressive? Did you like him?
I really liked him. He gives a great speech. And he's been out to Utah before to come to our state party events. Marianne Williamson was there, Seth Moulton, and I am totally blanking on
that's
the last
all right.
person
but
who was
a,
there.
But you get some fun ties.
Yeah.
You have any presidential claims to fame, Nick? Have you met some either living or past presidents?
No. When I was going to school in Nevada and Reno, and we had some candidates come through here and there, but no one notable that I was really able to get close to and get a photo op with.
That's all right.
One day.
It'll come. Well, I want to talk about close to home and talk about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints prophet, President Nelson. Spoke at the NAACP meetings this week. I believe it was in Detroit. Pretty unusual event. So the head of a world religion that, has Salt Lake City as its home, invited to this conference. There's a history with the LDS Church and the eligibility of all worthy males to hold the priesthood in the church. But it made for some interesting news. The president, President Nelson, was quoted as saying, "We truly believe that we are brothers and sisters, all part of the same divine family. We strive to build bridges of cooperation rather than the walls of segregation." I'm an active member of the LDS faith. It was really, I really enjoyed that the president was there and just wanted to get some of your local commentary on this. I realize it's a religious topic, but it made international news. Sasha?
I think it's always exciting when we are having different kinds of dialogue between faith communities and other community groups within our country. I think the NAACP has done really, really historic, important work, and that we have a religious leader from our state, President Nelson, attending their convention and being able to speak about sort of the shared humanity of everyone, I think is a really important message.
Yeah, that would be nice if that was contagious in politics, right?
Yes, it would.
Nick, I want to just read to you a quote that came from one of the leaders of the NAACP. He said, "We have unfortunately been complicit in the evil of racism in this nation, but unlike some persons in this country, we are humble enough to say we are sorry, we are going to change our ways, we are going to do a new thing, sing a new song, take a new talk, sorry, talk a new talk, walk a new walk. So this was this leader speaking of the LDS Church. Those were some pretty, you know, blunt, but I think accurate words.
You know, I think one of the biggest takeaways for me, and maybe to tie it into politics, when President Nelson, another one of his quotes, he talked about, we don't have to look the same to love each other. We don't have to even agree to love each other.
Yeah.
And as I look love at that. The vitriol in today's politics, we need a little bit more of that sentiment.
Yeah. Well, so there's a natural transition to our president and some of the things going on with his tweets attacking minority congresswomen. I've had some conversations with some of our other guests on the show about that. But, Nick, stay with you for just a minute. From the right and from a young Republican sort of perspective, how are you feeling about the posturing, the labeling, the division, the mean-spiritedness?
Well, I think it's important to say at the outset that any kind of xenophobic rhetoric that implies derision for somebody based on their ethnicity, their country of origin, or any other immutable characteristic is flat out wrong. It's unacceptable, should be repugnant to all of us. And I think it's kind of antithetical to conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
Our entire philosophy as conservatives, and hopefully as Republicans more broadly, is that we seek to conserve the principles of the ideas of liberty and equality for everybody in this country that were kind of enshrined in the country's founding. So rhetoric that goes against that, I don't think is appropriate. And I would really wish that the president would back off those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's interesting. That is a sentiment. I mean, I think our listeners know that I agree with you on things like that. Sasha, what do you see here?
This is a place where I think I can agree with Nick a little bit.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, I'm not going to mince words. It was repugnant. It was beneath the office, and frankly, it was shameful.
Mm-hmm.
The president of our country
continues to be. He keeps doubling down.
Yeah. I'm the daughter of an immigrant who did not come to this country the correct way, and I would argue that I am just as American as anybody else in this country. And the same thing goes for these representatives. Three of them were born here. Go back to your own country. He should be ashamed. And frankly, it'd be nice to see more members of the Republican Party stepping up to say that.
I want to see if the three of us agree. But this type of language and this type of attitude does not play well in Utah. Would you two agree with that?
I think that's probably generally true. Utah is fundamentally different from a lot of other places in the country where we tend to want, again, what we talked about before, President Nelson at the NAACP. We want more unity and that spirit of the idea that we're brothers and sisters. And I think it's important to recognize to Republicans that you can make good faith arguments against the policies or the ideas or even some of the statements and rhetoric of any member of Congress, any public official. You don't have to go down this road of attacking these other things because that's where you cross the line. We can have good debates. We can say, well, I disagree with them really strongly here, but do it in a respectful way where we're attacking ideas, not the person.
And I want to say from the political middle that we also have a state in Utah that is very internationally literate. A lot of people have lived in other countries, speak other languages, where it's a place that welcomes refugees. We've had some very progressive policies on immigration reform. So, Sasha, we can close it down with your comments there, but just, you know, do you agree that Utah's a place that would not go down the road with Donald Trump on these issues?
I've lived in a number of other states before coming to Utah.
Similar to Utah, a lot different than Utah?
Massachusetts and Pennsylvania, okay. So very
can't
different.
Too much different yeah. than Massachusetts and Utah.
And I have to say, the way that Utahns feel about immigration and refugees is one of the things that I love best about this place.
It's a beautiful
and about
thing
being
here.
It's
yeah.
yes, it's we need more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, I don't think that's the kind of. Yeah. I mean, amongst Utahns that I know, it's not the kind of rhetoric that plays well and that seems like a thing that people support. It seems very antithetical to sort of the whole culture of
yeah.
the place.
One more national issue with a local touch before we go to break. Congressman Ben McAdams voted with the Republicans to vote against the $15 federal minimum wage. Did you like that vote, Sasha? This is your guy. This is your top Democrat in the state.
So I was at a convention of over 1,000 other young Democrats when that vote came down, and Wearing my Utah badge, I certainly got a lot of questions from other attendees. And I'm not going to say that it's a vote that I particularly appreciated or supported, but I recognize that Representative McAdams has to rep how he feels his district would view and would support. I'm not actually in his district, but yeah, I wish he would have voted differently.
Mm-hmm. Nick will know from the economics class that he was in that I taught, you know, the economists view increases in the federal minimum wage that, you know, labor is a commodity just like any other commodity. And when you increase the price, you lower the amount consumed. So it has a detrimental effect on jobs. But I will add that the evidence would suggest it has to be a pretty large increase for that to happen. And I think in the final analysis, 15 was just too large.
Right. The Congressional Budget Office came out with something to that effect. I think Representative McAdams was mostly right on the policy. There are better ways to help this population, target investments in workforce training, as well as expansion of the earned income tax credit. I think there's ways to accomplish what we both want.
Sasha, what do you think? I taught him well. Just smiling. I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I have Sasha Lux Morgan with me and Nick Dunn. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Nick Dunn on the right.
I'm Sasha Lux Morgan on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we're talking about a lot of interesting policy and political issues impacting the state of Utah. I want to start this second segment with the United Utah Party. So this is the party that tries to, you know, play in the productive middle. That should be a natural home for someone like me. I understand some of what they do, but they are now they have announced that they will put forward a term limit ballot initiative, and this is for state offices, so not the congressional delegation, but it would be for our state senators, our state representatives, and statewide positions for the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, treasurer, and auditor. Interesting. Just to give just a tiny bit more detail, they're saying a 3-year term limit on state senators, a 6-term limit on state representatives, and an 8-year cap on statewide positions. Wow. Sasha, let's go to you first, because from the left, I'm not sure that there's always a consistent message about term limits. Like when the Republicans are in control, you don't like them, and when the, you know, but let's hear you. Let's let you represent it.
I hate them under all circumstances.
Under all circumstances.
I am very, very opposed to term limits because I think on their face, they seem like a great idea, fresh turnover, new blood in the legislature, new ideas. But in actuality, what it does is it just takes people who have built up institutional knowledge and artificially sort of turfs them out. I think a way better way of dealing with this issue of entrenched legislators is for us to really start running competitive primaries. And if we have somebody, my party, the Republican Party, the United Utah Party, who's been in office forever and who isn't doing a good job, let's get them out of office by primarying them, by beating them electorally. But let's not just get rid of institutional knowledge. And it sort of, as you do this, it leaves even more control in the hands of unelected people because these new legislators are even more reliant on staffers and bureaucrats, many of whom are very high-minded individuals just out to do the best job. But they aren't accountable to the voters, unlike electeds.
Yeah. Nick, let me read you a statement that was made by the United Utah Party Chairman Richard Davis. Richard's a friend of mine, great guy, teaches at Brigham Young University. But he said, the goal is to restore the ideal of citizen service and discourage career politicians. And then he said in his statement, what we are proposing is a reasonable term limit that still allows elected officials to serve long enough to make a difference. I'm going to just juxtapose, like, to get that experience and have that expertise, but not so long their career becomes more important than their constituents. Your comment, Nick.
You know, I understand the sentiment of where it comes from, and it's a perfectly respectable desire. And I appreciate Sasha's bold view on it. I tend to agree that I'm reluctant to get behind term limits. The central flaw with mandated term limits is that it suggests that we do not trust the voter to make the decision of when someone should be replaced. And I think that's the fatal flaw. The when in doubt, leave it to the people, trust the people. They are equipped and empowered constitutionally to make those decisions. rather than having a time frame that we decide on. Again, I get the sentiment, and I agree with Sasha. I think there are probably some better ways to have some churn if we want in our elected offices. But at the end of the day, we ought to trust the people.
Yeah, interesting. I will just say from the political middle, I've always been anti-term limit. It's because I worked in government for many years and I saw the value of people who actually learned a lot about how things work and had that expertise. And I figured if there were flawed politicians, there were ways to see that. But I will say that I would say maybe 4 years ago or something, I changed my mind when it comes to the congressional delegation or national term limits. And so I would be opposed to them at the state level, but I've just seen so much carnage in Washington, D.C. I'm just ready to make a difference there. And I realize that's not the proposal here, but Sasha, would you support a federal term limits?
I think that there are better ways of getting at that problem than term limits.
I think even with the dysfunction that's there.
I think things like campaign finance reform, electoral reform are going to be places where if it is easier for somebody to run and primary or run against in a general an incumbent who's been doing a bad job, then that's a better way of getting about it than saying, oh, sorry, you've been in Congress so long, like maybe you're a really big thought leader and you're running really great legislation and you're really responsive to your constituents, but like too bad. So it's just, it's in my mind, it's not the best way of solving that problem.
Nick, one time I was on the U.S. Senate floor just doing a tour, but the tour guide said to me that often when the senators are there and, you know, you're on the floor, it smells like Bengay. So if you're trying to figure out what that is, so that's the older gentlemen that are having joint problems and whatnot and need to kind of, you know, take care of their what ails them. But it is a really senior club. So your quick comment there.
You know, I'm more open to it on the federal level, but still kind of split and would maybe still lean toward no. Again, the institutional knowledge is valuable. Trusting the people is valuable. I think at the end of the day, we get the elected officials we deserve. The people are making that decision. And if there is dysfunction in Washington, it starts to some degree with us here at home in all of our home districts.
Yeah.
That's where we can start to fix it.
The lest one of our listeners accuse me of ageism or something, I just want to make clear that the old part is that they've been in for so many years. you have to, if you've been in for 40 some odd years, that puts you in, you know, that puts you in the senior class. Okay, let's talk about these most recent approval ratings. This is work that's been done by Y2 Analytics. I don't know the group well, but it's sort of a appendage to the Brigham Young University, the people that lead Y2 Analytics. They did some new approval ratings and showed a fairly shocking, in my mind, new low approval rating for our good governor, Governor Herbert, having him at 48% of voters polled. Saw him in a favorable light or gave him a high approval rating. I'm used to governors' approval ratings being in the low 70s in this state. Quick reaction. Nick, we'll go to you first, representing the right.
Well, you know, I think one of the key questions, we kind of bantered about this before the show, is what their methodology is, their sample size, so that there's some important questions of how they arrived at that number that I can't answer. But I would tend to agree with you that over the years, I've been living in Utah for about 8 years, and the time that I've been here, Utahns have been fairly pleased with Governor Herbert and the way he's managed the state.
The poll was public. Well, it was taken between June 27th and July 17th, so very recent. A random sample of 2,600 some odd registered Utah voters. So this is of registered voters. It was an online panel, a margin of error of plus or minus 2.1. Sasha, what's your read on that?
So, you know, I'm a Democrat, and I'm not going to complain if it seems like the Republican governor is polling badly. But no, the numbers, they don't seem to add up. I mean, I can't, off the top of my head, I can't pull up what his win margin was in 2016, but doesn't really seem to be reflective of that polling number. And again, with an online poll, how are they really deciding like what the makeup of the pool is going to be? And with a sample size that large, if you do out the stats, an error of plus or minus 2.1 points with the sample size of 2,500 or so, it leaves me with some questions.
Well, and the key would be, is it a truly random sample? so that it can be extrapolated to the broader population. The same poll had just under a third, 32%, don't like what they're seeing from the Utah governor. Those are, you know, I find that if I am the reading, the observing public, I want to really understand better what's going on there. It doesn't make sense to me, and it particularly doesn't make sense if you think about how well the economy's doing, which I want to go to next. But before we do that, let's do Spencer Cox, since he's the only gubernatorial candidate who's declared. Looks like he polled, it says, at the same time, half of Utahns polled either don't know what they think of Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox's job performance or neither approve nor disapprove of the work he's doing as Herbert's number two. Quick comment, guys.
Well, I think it's always interesting with the lieutenant governor. It's a unique role compared to the governor. And so that will obviously play into his visibility and what he's doing. I think, again, looking back over the years, Utahns have been fairly pleased with the management of the state. The question now is, what do we do next?
Yeah.
The challenges of the 2020s will not be the same as the 2010s.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's Pioneer Day this week. Celebrate the sort of founding of our state. The National Governors Association's in town. I don't know if either of you have ever attended an NGA event. Certainly in the West Wing, the NGA used to get a lot of attention. Some of you remember that. It's one of the more powerful lobbying groups in the country because the nation governors are so important. You just go back and look at our presidents, how many of them have been governors. But unfortunate that those low approval ratings in the press are happening right when NGA's here.
Yeah, although I wonder, you know, how much really are the other governors from other states really sitting down
any local
and
news?
Like tracking Gary Herbert's polling? I don't know that they really have a sort of a dog in the fight for the next governor of Utah, but it's exciting that they're here.
Sasha, can't help but ask you, from the young Democrats, who are we going to see put up as a gubernatorial candidate from the Democrats?
I'm not, you know, I haven't really heard too many names kicking around. Of course, within sort of the Young Democrats caucus, we're always having an internal horse race of like, oh, what state legislator would we love to see run for governor, or what sort of leader within our community. But I think it'll be interesting to see who decides to throw their hat in the ring. No names yet. No.
In my experience, it's fairly rare to be this close to a governor's race and not have that becoming more evident. We'll see as we get later in the summer, but interesting. Nick, any quick comment from the Republican side on the gubernatorial race?
You know, with it being an open seat, Governor Herbert not seeking re-election, you know, it'll be a fun year because there will be some folks running. But we, you know, we haven't had a truly open seat in a long time, so it's anybody's game.
Yeah. Unemployment in the state hit a 12-year low. 2.8% is the new number that was put out in the state jobs report. This is a strong and sustained economic expansion in our state. How do you think it figures into politics, Nick?
Well, I think a strong economy is something that people look for in leadership moving forward. The question now is, what do we do next? The low unemployment numbers are great, but the other things we have to look at are, again, kind of borrowing really from your book, Natalie, what's the labor force participation rate, and how's that doing, and also what's the underemployment? Wages have also been a concern that we've talked about, wanting to see those boosted. And so we need to recognize the good economic growth we've had, but then start to look at, well, what do we do now to make sure while we're in this period of growth, we can, again, make some investments where it needs to be made so that we're even better equipped for whenever the next recession comes.
He would be a good candidate, Sasha. He's got some pretty good lines.
I don't want him running in my district, that's for sure.
That's great. Hey, let's go to gripes. And Sasha, let's go to you first.
Perennial Pioneer Day gripe.
Okay.
Fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
Why do we have them? Everybody I know with small children hates them. Everybody I know with dogs hates them. Most people I know that are veterans hate them. They're bad for the air. Let's just get rid of them.
Wow. I think that's something that is worth considering. Nick?
My gripe is a little more national. CNN ran a headline saying that Trump claims to disavow the send her back chant. And we've already talked about his rhetoric on how it's problematic there, but he did disavow it. To say that he claimed to disavow, I just think, is sloppy political journalism on the part of CNN.
Yeah, very good. Mike, quick gripe. I've been watching these ads. I believe it's Mountain Star Hospital System. It's on the emergency room wait times. Drives me nuts. And I'm looking at Nick. He probably knows why. But emergency rooms are not supposed to be chosen based on wait times. I think it's so crazy that we have these hospital systems that are advertising off of wait times encouraging patients who have things that don't belong in an emergency room to come. And I've been watching them. They've been building. Have you seen any of the ads?
I think like a couple of times that I've driven down I-15, they have the big billboards.
Yeah, they have a little digital clock that counts down. It's a real no-no in health policy.
I mean, I'm not in health policy, but I spend a lot of time with
clinicians. It's the most expensive place to get care, you know, to get care. And you want people to go there when they have an urgent need, but not out of convenience.
Well, I've seen those billboards, and the only thought I've had is, well, as long as I have an emergency while driving south on I-15, I only have to wait 9 minutes. But if I'm not doing that,
go to the closest hospital. Right. Yeah. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. On the left, Sasha Lux Morgan, and on the right, Nick Dunn. I'm Natalie Gochner. The program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.